Locked On Nuggets podcast, your daily podcast on the Denver Nuggets. Now, here is your host from DenverStiffs.com, Adam Mades.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, part of the Locked On NBA Network. I'm your host, Adam Mades from DenverStiffs.com, the largest Denver Nuggets blog and community on the web. Check us out. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. This episode of the show, of course, it's going to be on the big win, season-saving win against the Portland Trail Blazers. A wild night, a memorable night, one of many, many, many memorable nights at Pepsi Center, and the dream is still alive. The Nuggets defeat the Portland Trail Blazers in an ugly win, a gritty win, a tough win, a back against the wall, left for dead win. Just really, really incredible night. I want to start this episode by talking about the crowd, because tonight's crowd, you know, there's been some really good crowds at Pepsi Center really since the start of 2018. There were some sprinkled in November and December, but it really wasn't until the end of football season, of course, that people started showing up to the game pretty consistently. And, you know, this one, I think, game 81 of the season, the final home game of the season, barring playoffs, and I thought it was the best crowd Denver had all year, and probably the best crowd that has been there since 2013. For starters, you know, I never know how much the city of Denver, like the casual Nuggets fan, not the diehard Nuggets fan, but the casual Nuggets fan, of which, you know, 80% of Nuggets fans are casuals. You know, only diehards really get into the kind of the thick of everything. I always wonder how much do the casuals know about Nurkic and sort of his tenure in Denver, how he departed last year, wishing them a happy summer, all these things. So the diehards, I think, have a very healthy hatred, you know, like sports hatred. I always have to classify hatred because I don't think anybody like wishes harm on Nurkic or anything like that. But as long as he is suiting up and, you know, stepping on the hardwood, I think you kind of sports hate the guy. And so I didn't know how much the casuals really hate him. And tonight, as they announced his name, it was like everybody in the arena was waiting for it. It was, there was this funny, I was kind of like wondering if the crowd was going to get into it or not. And, it, you know, they announced Lillard, nothing. They announced Aminu, nothing. And as soon as they get to Nurkic, it's like everybody was holding their breath and just waiting, and then just rained down some boos on him. And it was a sign of things to come because, you know, this was just such a great Nuggets crowd. I haven't seen, this is almost sad to say, but, you know, we haven't seen a Nuggets crowd that has been able to do some of these chants unprompted. You know, let's go Nuggets, defense, all that kind of stuff. Usually maybe Rocky's leading the charge or the Jumbotron or, God, the worst, throw Tom Brady up. They didn't have to throw Tom Brady up on the Jumbotron at all tonight when the opponents were shooting free throws. The crowd was just naturally loud enough, which makes me very happy. I hate that they put Tom Brady up on the Jumbotron sometimes to incite boos. But the crowd was great. They were cheering nonstop throughout the game, even in the early parts of it. Even when the Nuggets were kind of struggling, the crowd would get loud and was just ready to explode for every play. Such a fun atmosphere. And the reason I bring all of this up is because win or lose on Wednesday, and Wednesday, of course, becomes a game for all the marbles. If the Nuggets win, they're in the playoffs. If they lose, they are not. It's that simple. But whatever happens, I think it's safe to say that Mile High Basketball is back. And I know the making the playoffs and even making some noise in the playoffs is going to go a long way to selling season tickets and kind of reinvigorating the fan base even more. But I think everybody in town, I think it's safe to say that they have caught on to this team and are on board with rooting for this team. And it's really cool to see. I got more on that later with Gary Harris, but it was really cool to see this crowd tonight so engaged. It also started off Mason Plumlee. The last game of the year, usually a team will have a player address the crowd and kind of say some words. Well, you know, this might not be the last game of the year. It's the last game of the regular season, and Mason Plumlee got up there and he said something to the effect of, it's been a really good year, and then kind of paused, like thinking, well, how am I going to phrase this? You know, let's keep it going. But I thought it was really, really cool. On to some of the notes. So if you've never listened to the show, I don't recap the game. I provide my notebooks and my insight, so you kind of get a sense for how the game went. But if you missed the game, you can check out our gamer on DenverStiffs.com, which goes into detail about the ebbs and flows of it. But my first note in here is that The Nuggets, the Trailblazers had two players that really didn't need to be guarded too heavily in the three-point line that really helped Denver's defense. The first is Al-Farouq Aminu, and the second, Evan Turner. Neither of them, you know, Aminu, a streaky three-point shooter. If you remember the first time Denver played Nurkic in a Portland uniform, that game where I believe it was this game. It might have been the second time they played. Aminu made three or four three-pointers in the first quarter. The Nuggets had the same strategy. We're going to leave Aminu, and if he beats you, you live with it. Well, in that game, Aminu started 3-3 or 4-4, something like that, in the first quarter alone. And it was one of those things where I was like, well, that sucks. you count on their worst scorer to take open shots and miss him, and he took open shots and made them. Tonight, Denver stuck with that same game plan, and they put Jokic on Aminu. They put Millsap on Nurkic. And they just dared him to beat them from the three-point line. It really messed up their spacing. Portland wanted to put Jokic in the pick-and-roll, but they didn't necessarily want to put Aminu in the pick-and-roll. So they kind of found themselves a little bit in a pickle there. And so they ran pick-and-roll and just would stick Jokic in the corner. Jokic could kind of muck up at help side and be in the paint, and it really threw them off rhythm. And Denver got off to a hot start. I think Will Barton... You know, this is another one. I so highly encourage people to get, if the Nuggets do make the playoffs, I encourage you to go. I didn't grow up going to the arenas. I watched sports on, you know, Broncos, Nuggets, Rockies, whatever. I watched them at home. For whatever reason, my family just didn't grow up going to the arena, going to games. So I really missed this experience going up. And over the last 4 or 5 years, going to all of these games as much as I have, you know, obviously, I think I went to 39 games this season at Pepsi Center. You really get to see how cool of an experience it is to kind of be in these moments. And to start the game, the Nuggets are up 12-3. Will Barton is hitting some shots, and not just hitting them, but these are things that aren't picked up on the camera. He is yelling at the crowd to get up and just feeding off of the crowd. And it was really, really a cool thing to see. I thought Denver did a good job in the first quarter of pushing the pace. This was a slower paced game overall, but in that first quarter, I thought Denver had made a conscious effort to push the pace and get the ball up. Even on makes, even when Portland scored, they'd still push it up. And I thought, you know, it's always impossible to say if it worked, but in the fourth quarter, Portland really tired out. Lillard missed four free throws. He missed some easy shots, some easy, you know, jumpers. And maybe that's just because they were off tonight. But I do think when you're able to push a team early at altitude, it just gives you that much a little bit of an edge. The big storyline, well, I can't say the big storyline. There was a lot of big storylines to this game. But one of the big storylines was Gary Harris's return. And what a welcome sight. What a sight for sore eyes to see him back out there. Because even though I thought he looked below 100%, and no surprise, anybody coming back from injury I think is below 100%. In their first game back. But he still contributed, and he still was able to knock down shots. He had some nice moves. He was relatively fearless. He attacked the basket a few times that I was very afraid for him. But his presence is just so huge, and I really do think it shores up the rotation. When you look at the guys who played tonight, you know, Trey Lyles got 4 minutes and Torrey Craig got six. But outside of that, you had your core guys playing, Devin Harris, Gary Harris, and Mason Plumlee off the bench, and then your starters. And I think going forward, when Gary Harris is able to play more than 20 minutes, he played 18 in this game, you know, that maybe you even cut out a Trey Lyles or a Torrey Craig or possibly even a Devin Harris, although Devin Harris really playing better and better with each game, it seems. I just think your rotation gets that much more cleaned up, and you didn't really see that the bench be such an anchor. The starters were still good, and all obviously, as is usually the case, Jokic on the floor lineups are better than Jokic not on the floor lineups. He was a plus 18 in 38 minutes tonight. So, and Nuggets win by 8. So do the math for when he was off the court. You know what happened there, but Gary Harris being able to play more and more minutes, I just think there's less and less of a chance that Denver gives up these 20-5 runs because now you have 7-8 guys you can really count on. I thought Jamal Murray had a bit of a rough game from shooting-wise, and it was funny. He was 1-for-6 for deep, and there were three shots in the fourth quarter. I think Jamal Murray's the most clutch player on the Nuggets roster. I don't really believe in clutch, but just in terms of what I think clutch is guys who can make knockdown shots, whether they're contested uncontested and guys that just handle pressure situations. Well, I think Murray's built for it, but tonight he had three wide open 3-point opportunities and he missed all three of them. And you could see he was really down on himself on the court. After the game, Millsap talked about going up and talking to him, and I thought it was really cool. You actually saw this on the broadcast. I went home and watched the game a second time, as I always do, and caught the moment Millsap alluded to post-game. And he comes out of the huddle after Murray missed, I think, his third 3-pointer, wide open, would have probably sealed the game a little bit earlier had he hit one or two of those. And he puts his arm around him, is like, "You missed shots, but just go out and do something else now." So you're not going to be able to get those shots back, but that doesn't mean you can't still be have an impact on the game. So go out and do something else. And I just like that. Immediately following that play, Paul Millsap picked up a charge on Yusef Nurkic, and that was and then right after that, he went up to Murray again and grabbed him and said, "See, stuff like that. You don't have to hit shots to make a difference." And I just love little moments like that. I think they're too cool. Yusef Nurkic was everywhere tonight, and had Denver lost this game, it's great that they won. This is a feel-good moment in every sense, but had they lost, this would have been a nightmare scenario, I think, for Nuggets fans, because the best player on the court for three of the first three quarters was Yusef Nurkic. There were guys that made some good plays. Barton made some good plays. You know, there was other guys that contributed in moments, but Yusef Nurkic dominated the style and the storyline. The storyline was that the Denver Nuggets could not clear the defensive glass, and in particular because of Yusef Nurkic. I've always thought, and when he was here, I wrote about this and about part of his skill set. I think Andre Drummond has the same skill set. I think the two of them are actually somewhat similar or can be similar in style because they're so big and so agile for their size and weight. But when he sets the screen and rolls to the basket, not necessarily to catch the roll, the pass on the roll, but when he just rolls to anchor himself underneath the basket for offensive rebounding position, he is a complete handful. And after the game, you know, Millsap is like 6'9", 6'10". He's ripped. He's jacked. Yusef Nurkic is a legit 7 foot and just twice as wide as him. He's just too big. And after the game, Millsap even said as much, like, that he felt weak out there because trying to guard a 300-pound dude, that was just way too strong for him. But I think Nurkic is best used that way. I think Stotts uses him really, really well in that regard. Roll him to the rim. Have him anchor himself in there. You can't move him. He's big enough that you can't just push him once he, like, has anchored himself by the basket. So you got to hope the ball bounces properly. And tonight he was just eating up the glass. And it really I tweeted this out because I think it's an interesting sort of development. The Nuggets have gotten worse on the defensive glass as the season has worn on, and I'm really not sure what to make of it. So in November, they ranked 9th in defensive rebound percentage. This is the amount of defensive rebound, I believe, opportunities that your team grabs. So Denver ranked 9th in November, 8th in December, 7th in January. Then in February 26th, March 26th, April 23rd. I'm not sure what happened, but something has happened to Denver's defensive rebounding that has just completely affected. And what's weird is that date I gave you, that coincides with the return of Paul Millsap. So as Denver has gotten bigger, they have gotten worse as a defensive rebounding team. Really, really something to watch, because that was a strength of Denver. You know, that had been one of the strengths for them on the defensive end. Now, Denver's defense has gotten better, and I thought this was one of the better defensive second halves, or really last, like, 15 minutes or so that Denver has had. But it's worth noting that they've really struggled on that glass. Everything changed in this game when Michael Malone picked up his technical foul. This was a game where I thought both teams had legitimate gripes. All right, both teams were really, really off from the three-point line, so there's that. And it wasn't one team or the other. Both teams missed shots that I think they usually make. Both teams got some really, really bad foul calls against them and some bad foul calls that went uncalled or you know, some no calls that should have been called. So both teams, I think, had very legitimate gripes throughout the game. And Malone, you know, Murray drove to the basket. He goes up for a dunk. He gets blocked. And I actually think it's a legitimate play. It wasn't a foul. I don't think Malone cared. I think Malone sensed in that third quarter that the energy just wasn't there, and something had to happen. And he had that card in his back pocket of, hey, if I get a, not just a technical, but a fiery technical and really, really wake, you know, shake things up, maybe it'll, the crowd and the roster will feed off of it. And that is exactly what happened. This move doesn't work all the time. We've seen this in sports a lot where a coach gets a technical and it's like, okay, that didn't work. Everybody saw what you were doing. I think everybody in the arena knew what Michael Malone was trying to do. He was trying to fire guys up. He was trying to send a message to his team, but it actually worked this time. And it's funny, when he got the technical, the entire crowd got on their feet and just started screaming. Like they were hyped about it. They were excited. Then Damian Lillard comes down to shoot the technical free throw and misses it. The crowd gets even more excited. The Nuggets go on a run almost immediately after that. And from that moment on, you know, Denver had to do their part and kind of take advantage of that moment. But once Denver did and started making some shots, it just snowballed. That crowd never went back to sleep. Not that they were good the whole game, but they went up to a whole other level after that technical. And then Denver started making a run, and it was just incredible. The crowd absolutely loved it. It was as loud as at any point in the season, and the Nuggets fed off of it. I thought Jokic in particular came to life at this moment. So we're talking about 6 minutes to go in the third quarter, so you're 18 minutes left in the game. And from that point on, I thought Jokic in particular, but the Nuggets collectively really came to life and started to take over and started to play with confidence and with aggression. And kudos to Michael Malone. I thought he pushed a lot of good buttons in this one, including putting Jokic on Aminu, including, you know, slacking off of Turner and daring him to shoot a bunch of threes. And then, of course, that technical that he worked. Now, I was talking to some guys after the game. Malone gave a speech at halftime and told everybody, hey, look, all the teams in the West are winning, you know, looking around at the score. So you have to win this game or whatever. I don't think that speech was really necessarily effective because the team came out in that third quarter and still was flat. We had this debate after the game, me and some other of the beat reporters and some of the bloggers and different people around. And, you know, the players seemed to dismiss the speech. After the game, Jokic kind of joked that, you know, like he doesn't even remember what Malone said at the half. So I don't think that was really what turned the game around. To me, what turned the game around was that technical foul and the crowd and the roster feeding off of it. Will Barton is the heartbeat of this Nuggets roster. And it's funny, you know, he's been the scapegoat at certain points of this roster. He's been of the season. He's been the hero. I think he's the heartbeat, and I absolutely 100% am in favor of bringing him back to the Nuggets next year. I think the lineup that, you know, that he provides, when you can play with Murray, Harris, Barton, either two of the three at all times or all three of them in like kind of a super lineup, the Nuggets are just so good. And, you know, he's been forced into some weird roles this year where he hasn't excelled, but I think his natural role of kind of this heartbeat scorer, confident swagger, he refused to lose in this game. To start the game, I mentioned how he was just like his energy level was just through the roof, and you could tell he almost needed to take a chill pill because he was so hyped. But he also just refused to lose, and there was one play in particular right in the heart of all of this that I'm talking about after the technical and when Denver was starting to make their move and make their run. He goes up inside, kind of gets stripped, blocked, whatever. He's in a crowd of like three different Portland Trailblazers, and he grabs his own rebound, kind of takes one dribble just to get just enough space to go up strong and goes up and finishes it. And he might have been fouled. He looked at the ref like he thought he was fouled. But it was just one of those plays where it was like he told himself he's going to score this basket through hell or high water. And sure enough, he was able to get it in. And there were just so many plays like that tonight where I felt like he just refused to lose. And it's great to see. I talked about how after the Clippers' loss at home, when Denver got Bobon'd about a month ago, I talked about how Will Barton, who's a guy who always sort of feeds off of adversity and this is a challenge, we can overcome it. That was the first time I'd ever seen him kind of go to a dark place and just say, man, we shouldn't have lost this game. I don't know what to tell you. Playoff teams don't lose games like that. And I thought for the couple games after that, he had kind of gone into a slump. Part of his worst stretch of the season came right after that Clippers loss. Well, I think he snapped out of it and he's kind of back, especially over the last 6, 7, 8 games or so. He's really back to being thrill and to and just being this confidence boost for the Nuggets, and it's really been fun to watch. It was also great to see Devin Harris hit the go-ahead three-pointer. So Denver's clawing back, trying to take the lead, and they finally do off of a Devin Harris three. He's been, I know he got off to that slow start, but he's just been so good, I think. 14 minutes tonight, only 2 of 9 shooting, 5 points, 2 assists. So the numbers don't jump out at you, but I just think he's done such a good job and been such a missing piece for this Nuggets roster. Whether he's back next year or not, I would probably guess not. But he has certainly, in my opinion, provided what he's needed to over this last, like, 10-game stretch. I wanted to end here by talking about Nikola Jokic. And as I often do, I think that he's the most important and most interesting storyline surrounding the Nuggets almost every single night. And tonight, you know, the numbers are silly. 15 points, 20 rebounds, 11 assists, 2 steals, a block, a team-high plus 18. He only shot 5 of 14, played 38 minutes. This was a game. It's funny because after the game, I didn't think this would be a controversial question, but I asked him, like, in what ways has he grown as a player over the last month? And he really hated that question. He, like, shook his head and looked at me and was like, oh, I love this question, and then wouldn't answer it. He's like, ask my godfather. He likes that one, something like that. He was really annoyed by it. I was taken aback by how much he did not enjoy that question. But if he's not going to provide me with his insight, I'm going to provide you guys with mine, because to me, this last month, of all the things that have happened in this Nugget season, the growth that Jokic has gone through in the last month is worth whatever the price that Denver misses the playoffs, whatever. All of it will be worth it for this sort of hurdle that I believe Jokic has overcome. And we talk about one of the complaints about this season is that the Nuggets haven't been good at playing Jokic ball, quote-unquote Jokic ball. And what I mean by that is, you know, the ball isn't always popping. Things aren't always flowing through Jokic. The spacing isn't always great. The lineups and rotations and all this stuff. There's a lot of stuff, one, I disagree with how the team plays, and two, you know, just that hasn't gone right, and sometimes this happens. But if Jokic was a player who throughout his career only performed well when the table was set for him, he would be a genius locked into, you know, whatever circumstance he was thrown into. What we've seen with Jokic, in my opinion, over the last really month and a half, is we've seen this growth in him that he now, you don't have to stack everything right for him. And when I say stack everything right, I don't mean like everything has to be easy for him. I argued this with Matt Moore before in the past, where he says, well, Jokic will only excel in one style of play. And I said, yeah, but that style is called good basketball, like high IQ basketball he'll succeed in. It's not like it's a gimmicky system. And I really believe that. But what has changed with Jokic over this last month is he's figured out a way to be not just, he's always impactful. He's always a positive player no matter what you do. But he's found a way to be his regular self and dominate games even when the team isn't doing what they should be doing, or when just things aren't going the way they should be going. Shots aren't falling, foul calls aren't going your way, whatever. And that's really the growth. So tonight he went, you know, he shot horribly, 5 of 14, only 1 of 4 from the three-point line. He wasn't getting the foul calls he thought he needed or he deserved. And his counterpart, Jusuf Nurkić, is absolutely dominating the game. Well, down the stretch, the final 15 minutes or so, he put his head down and he just found a way. He found whatever way he could to get this game to be turned into a win. And he finished with 20 rebounds. So first, he locked up the rebounds. In the fourth quarter, I think the Nuggets almost had double the amount of rebounds as Portland. So you talk about the biggest battleground in the game, and Denver dominated the fourth quarter there, largely led by Jokic, who had 20. He got his 11 assists. He got his 15 points. He knocked down a three-pointer. He didn't wilt. He didn't pout. And I really compare this game, if you think back to the second game of the season, second or third game of the season, Denver's playing the Sacramento Kings, and Jokic, you know, I think he had 0 points on 0 of 3 shooting or something like that. And it was a bizarre game. And after the game, it was, well, what's wrong with Jokic? Is something wrong? Oh, but he was like a plus 21 in the game. And there was all this controversy. And I think what we've come to realize about Jokic is two things can be true at the same time. Jokic dominated that Sacramento game, and he wasn't himself. And and I know Jokic is such a strange player. He's such a contradiction sometimes, and he's so hard to figure out. But I think that's the difference between the start of the season and the end of the season for Nikola Jokic is, whereas before he would say, well, fine, I'm not getting the ball where I want. The team's not doing what I want, so I'm going to facilitate, but I'm going to pass up open shots and kind of pout. And there was no doubt about it. He was mopey in that game against Sacramento early in the year. Well, tonight, similar type of thing. Things aren't going his way, but instead of just being a passive facilitator, he was an absolutely aggressive leader of the team and found a way to will this team to victory. And if there's anything else that comes out of this season, Jokic's growth in that department is just so important. I think Denver is at their best when they play through Jokic and they spread the court and they accommodate him as much as they can. And really, they do everything in their power to accommodate his style of play. And they've done a bad job of doing that, I think, this year. But the fact that he's learned how to be impactful at all times, if they ever do figure out how to get back to this Jokic ball style of offense consistently, we've seen flashes of it, you know, over the last month, which is not the way we're accustomed to, you know, 48 minutes of them playing that style. But if they ever do find that, plus with his newfound focus and resiliency, I just think it's a huge, huge step. There's no question in my mind that Nikola Jokic took a huge step forward this year and a huge step forward in this last month of the season, and it's been really great. Lastly, you know, after the game, there was a really cool moment where Matt Moore asked Gary Harris to reflect on this crowd. I mean, the crowd was so great. It was a storyline, and he asked Gary, you know, Gary Harris was a guy that has been here right from the start of the rebuild. He got here in 2014, so really at the low point for the Nuggets, he arrived, and he said, you know, it's funny, I got booed. I remember being booed off the court against Portland, no less. And nobody, it's funny, I was the only guy that remembered this game, but Portland came in on the second night of a back-to-back back in 2014, early in Gary Harris's career. And on the second night of a back-to-back with travel in between, Portland hung 84 first-half points on the Denver Nuggets. 39 in the first quarter, 45 in the second quarter, and the crowd booed them into the locker room at halftime. Tonight, the Nuggets held the Portland Trail Blazers, the same team, obviously a different roster, but same organization, and they held them to 82 points total in a must-win game, and the crowd, of course, cheered them every single step of the way. This is what makes this team so interesting to me and what makes sports so fun. I've talked about this when, you know, people at certain radio station in Denver and certain talking heads and hot take artists and general idiots have talked about how the Denver team isn't relevant and, oh, call me when they're a playoff team, call me when they're a contender. This is what sports, you know, you always play to win. And obviously the storyline when a team is competing for a championship is far more interesting than anything else. But this storyline, being, I'm excited and kind of happy to be able to say I got to witness every step of this because I saw Gary Harris, his rookie season, get booed off of the court, give up 84 points and a half. And I've seen every step along the way to where they are now, to where the crowd is cheering them on and imploring them on, and to when they're rewarding the crowd with efforts like tonight. And to me, sports are about championships and competitiveness and all that stuff, but they're also about these little micro storylines in there. And it was really cool to see Gary Harris on his first game back sort of reflect on that moment. And, you know, he reflected on it with a smile on his face, and it was just a really, really cool thing. That's it for today, guys. I will have another episode tomorrow. Of course, I have to have another episode tomorrow. We're in the thick of it, and there's a lot of stuff to talk about ahead of Wednesday's game. But this was a fun one. Thanks so much for tuning in, and I'll talk to you all tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and visit us on the web at denverstiffs.com.